All right, welcome everyone. We are the That's So Cincinnati podcast from the Cincinnati Inquirer, cincinnati.com. I'm here, I'm Jason Williams. I'm the political columnist from the Inquirer. I'm here with my co-host Sharon Coolidge, who is our Cincinnati City Hall reporter. And we co-host this podcast once a week. It posts on Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, Spotify, all your podcast platforms every week at Wednesday at noon. And I want to thank, we're here, obviously you know where we're at. So thank you for those of you who came out tonight because of that, thank you. And for those of you who are here to drink beer for Braxton, thank you as well.
Wait, you gotta say where we're at.
We are at Braxton Brewing in Covington, Kentucky on West 7th Street at what I think is the absolute best brewery in Greater Cincinnati. I'll be honest.
You're going to get added.
1A is Braxton for me, and 1B is 50 West, and that is how it is. And so we want to welcome in, Sherry and I want to welcome in Braxton Brewing Company CEO, Jake Rouse. Jake, thanks for letting us do this.
No, thanks
first
for
of all,
me.
And thanks for taking the time to sit down with us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, guys. Thanks so much. It's a beautiful night out. I thought it was going to rain all day, and now we got this awesome sun. So
I spent the entire day praying. It's fine.
Before I...
Yeah, it worked.
That's Cincinnati. I just prayed for it not to rain, and there we are.
Before I, before we jump to chatting with Jake, I want to say that we have some swag, some free beers. I think my mic is dead, maybe? No? Okay. We have some swag, some free beers that we're going to invite people up to come in and sit in the seat where Jake is, so...
I mean, let's
don't
face
be shy.
It. People are sick of hearing our That So Cincinnati moments.
We want to, after we chat with Jake, we want to invite people up to share their, you know, their Cincinnati-est, greater Cincinnati-est moment and talk about what their favorite Braxton beer is. So don't be shy. We got some swag for you or a free beer. Yes.
You know, honestly, though, like people were asking me, like, oh, you're doing it in Braxton? That's over the river. Do you know that? I do. But that's so Cincinnati. I mean, come on. Our airport's over here.
That's right.
We're all one. And the view of the city from this rooftop bar is incredible. I've been up here before already. It's been only open, I think, 3 weeks.
3 weeks,
like,
yep.
Like, the sunset is incredible over
Thank
the city.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. This was, you guys, the rooftop was a tremendous addition to a growing company. And let's just jump to it. Can you talk about the idea of the rooftop, and
sure.
We'll get to the history of Braxton and all the new beers. But while we're here and while people are enjoying the rooftop, how did the whole idea come about? And you know, what's been the reception?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, so we're going on 5 years old. We had our 4-year anniversary. We celebrated in July. It was actually in March. The roof was supposed to be open a lot earlier than
That's
it actually
every
was.
Every project has ever so, been.
but, you know, we are going on 5 years old, and we basically, my brother and I, we started the company. It was born in our garage on Braxton Drive, which is where we got the name. And ultimately, we knew that that Covington has embraced us so well, and that we love Covington. We love Cincinnati. We love all the neighborhoods that make up this amazing city that we're in, right? And we really wanted to commit to making this our forever home, because the brewery was fantastic. It's been growing. We've been thrilled and honored at how much the community has embraced us. But we knew that to some of the other breweries around town, we were missing kind of that signature thing that was, you know, why you go there, right? You go to Braxton because they have great beer always. But
I do think that is the draw. I don't think people are like, what's the space? The space is always like second.
Yeah.
I do think people go to their breweries. They have a brewery.
No, that's absolutely
true. They're going for the
beer.
There's
no doubt. There's no doubt. And ultimately, you know, we basically really, really wanted to create something that would pay homage to everything that we were creating. And so we moved forward with a massive plan to buy the building, build the rooftop, and completely renovate the second floor to make this 3-story building feel like one brewery. And that we broke ground on that in December of last year and finally opened in July of this year. So it was a long process, and there's still some things that need to get complete for it to be actually done. But we're here on the roof, and it's pretty
also
awesome.
Also, like every renovation project ever, you have to move in before it's done.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
But you know what?
Exactly.
The bar is open up here, so I feel like that's like your kitchen, and that's all that's you really
right.
need.
Yeah. Yeah, we could really use the elevator. I don't know if you had any trouble getting up the 68 stairs.
I'm good, but we want everyone to be able to get up, though. So, all right, fair enough. An elevator, that's a good thing.
You talked about, you referenced the history of the company, and you're a little over 4 years old. Congratulations, by
Thank
the
you.
Way. This is a top-notch company that's committed to excellence, and I can see it when you're sitting here on this rooftop and when you're drinking your beer and sitting downstairs or even going to Braxton Labs over at Party Source, which I just first went to last week. Can you talk about the history and even where it started? You grew up on Braxton Street in Union, Kentucky.
That's right.
And from there, how did it all get going?
Wait, do your parents still live there?
They just sold the house about a year ago. It was a sad moment. But
so it's going to be a museum now? Really, is that how that works?
But they really wanted to get closer. Because being in the alcohol industry, that Uber ride is tough.
Okay. I Ubered here tonight.
And so, you know, ultimately, what happened was we started Braxton after really getting everything going on Braxton Drive. We grew up. My brother was 16 years old when he brewed his first batch of beer on Braxton Drive. And at that point, I went to Indiana University. I went away for school and then left and went into the tech industry. And I watched from afar Evan kind of learn how to take recipes that he was brewing in the garage and try to figure out what's next. Because, you know, this industry now has 7,000 breweries, and of those 7,000 breweries, there's a lot of people who were great home brewers that want to take a shot at opening a brewery. Same thing as a restaurateur. I love to cook. I'm going to open up a restaurant. That works sometimes.
What's the span of the 7,000? Where are we talking? Like,
there's 7,000 breweries in America today.
In America.
Is that just craft breweries? Is that all breweries?
I think that's all breweries. But essentially, we kind of watched, and you know, it's like, that works sometimes, but it isn't the... doesn't always work out. And so I told my brother, I'm like, if you want to make the next step, you've got to learn how to professionally brew, because there's a big difference between the quality and consistency you get out of our beer than, kind of the home brew that he would make at home. And he ended up going and taking an opportunity at Hoffer House in Newport. And
really?
At that point, he was a grunt. He was cleaning tanks, you know, learning how to build recipes and whatnot at the place that is a 400-plus-year-old brewery. And at that point, he basically took the opportunity to cut his chops on how to, you know, scale recipes and make quality, consistent beer. And so we was in tech. I watched him. He did that for about 2.5 years. And I finally said, like, we got to do this. We got to give it a shot. And so we basically, I left my tech job. I came back to Cincinnati and we broke ground on this place. We broke ground in August of 2014 and opened March of 2015.
Dang.
I know, time goes by really fast because I feel like you've been here longer than that.
Yeah.
So, but I moved here in 2002.
Okay.
And, you know, it was after the unrest and things were, you know, there weren't a lot of places to go. And I've watched this city really grow into the brewery city that we are on this side of the river and the other side. And, like, how many breweries do we have here, do you know?
I want to say there's north of 60. I think it's 62 was the last number that I heard, but I'm not 100% positive on that.
If we're starting to see, I feel like each neighborhood has, this is like, and it's such an homage to our history here, like these neighborhood breweries that you can walk to, and this is certainly true of this. I saw someone, you know, when I was coming in with their stroller, and like, obviously it's a Tuesday night when we're recording this, and just coming up probably for a drink and something to eat.
Yep.
I want to jump back to the history. And so you mentioned there was a 16-year-old brewer in your basement named Evan Rouse, who is now the co-founder of Braxton and the chief product officer. How does a 16-year-old get interested in making beer?
Yeah, you know what actually happened? It's pretty funny. So they dropped me off at Indiana University. My brother's always been a tinkerer, an engineer at heart that just loves to build things. And when they dropped me off at Indiana University, I went to school there in 2008, so this was prior to the craft beer boom, like everybody, you know, doing craft. We went to lunch at a brewery called Upland, and they had been around for quite some time. They make really great beers in Bloomington, Indiana. And when we were sitting there, like, the waiter was telling us about the fact they make their own beer there. And obviously neither my brother nor him nor I could drink. But we were both fascinated by the fact that you could make your own beer. And so from the drive from Bloomington, from Upland, back to Cincinnati, in that 2.5 hours, Evan had pulled his iPhone out and ordered a homebrew kit and told my dad they're going to make beer in the garage and figure it out.
And your dad said...
Sure.
Okay, all right. Your dad sounds really fun.
So Evan never drank beer until he was 21 years old. But
you can always find a taster somewhere.
Right.
For those of you who are not live here and are listening, going to be listening to this on Wednesday and beyond on Apple Podcasts, we are live at Braxton Brewing. This is our second live show. Our first live show was at the Flying Pig Marathon. And so we want to thank, and it was, the response to that was awesome. We want to thank Braxton for offering us to come out here tonight to their awesome, beautiful rooftop and sit down with Jake. Jake, Sherry alluded to, you know, how many breweries there are in this area. It is a competitive world we live in. How do you differentiate yourself from, you know, 60 some other breweries just around greater Cincinnati?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that is consistently becoming more challenging.
Yeah.
To us, really what it comes down to is two things. Number one, well, three things rather, the quality and consistency of the product, so that you know that the beers you love from us are always going to taste the same. And we have a lab, we have a full scale microbiology lab on the second floor with three lab people running that every day that make sure that that beer is the same quality and consistency every day that it comes out. But the other two are really just important about making sure that you're staying in front of your customer and, like, talking to them. Like, we, you know, Evan and I, you know, we're fortunate that we were able to start this business when we were so young. I'm 29 and Evan's 27. So we spend a lot of time here, and we spend a lot of time here just talking to people. Like, what are you drinking? What are you drinking that isn't beer? What are you drinking that is beer? What do you like? What do you don't like? And that really helps fuel kind of the third most important thing, which is innovation. And so Braxton Labs over in Newport, you mentioned that you stopped by there. That has been one of the best things that we've ever done as a business, because we're landlocked in this building. And so the ability for us to innovate here is not really all that great, because we've got so many big tanks. And you can't really take a risk on 120 barrels of beer, because it's a lot of pints if it doesn't work out. So the ability to pick Braxton Labs and, like, create a brewery that doesn't really have a set schedule, that there's a lot of free-flowing ideas, a lot of ability to kind of create whatever you're feeling that week, is has produced a lot of home runs, not a lot of misses, but also a lot of home runs. And being able to do that at scale, I think, is what has allowed us to really stay in front of, like, really all the trends.
You talked about Braxton Labs, and for those of you who have not checked out Braxton Labs, be sure to check that out. It's in the Party Source building, in the back in the area where all the local beers are sold. Yep. So be sure to check out Braxton Labs. It seems to me like you have more beers on tap available there than you actually have even here, right?
Yeah, there's 40 taps over there. So we have 30 downstairs, 20 up here on the roof, but there's 40 there. And we do some guest taps over there, some breweries that make beers that we really like. Because it's all about learning, and we get to really understand what people want to drink over there. So it's pretty fun.
Speaking of learning, can you take us through the process of how you decide on a new style of beer, a new flavor of beer? You guys have tried so many different things.
Yeah.
You've partnered with Graders. You have the blackberry pie. I just tried that a couple weeks ago. It's awesome. Can you take us through the process, sort of the behind the scenes of how, you know, you decide on, so is it Evan then who, Evan goes into the lab, right? And essentially, you know, brews up a batch, and does he then bring it to
So Evan works really closely with our team of brewers. So we have a guy by the name of Zach Benke, who's our lead innovation brewer. So he runs Braxton Labs, that whole facility. He works really closely with Evan, but you know, what really happens is we sit down, and we really talk about what are the gaps in our portfolio. And a lot of times, like, there's a lot of different things that happen here, right? There's the beers that your brewers really, really want to produce. And you know that any time that a brewer is incredibly passionate about producing a beer, it's going to turn out fantastic, because they're going to put their heart and soul into it. Mm-hmm. That's how we got Garage Beer. Garage Beer was a year and a half battle of my brother saying, we have to produce this beer. And finally, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to shut up and listen to him. And it's actually going to reinvent the company in 2020.
I brought that home from the FC race. That was like, it was just like giving out at the race. It's like, oh, this is the best race swag ever.
Yeah.
And I put it, that was a very hot night. I did not drink it while I was there. I put it in the fridge. I'm like, tomorrow night, I'm going to have this. And before I could even blink, my husband's like, oh my God, I tried that beer in the fridge. It was delicious. And he was like, Alex Coolidge, right? He works with us. And it was gone. And so, and now, but it has since appeared, you know, because he's bought it.
That's awesome. And it is, it's an amazing, like it's an amazing beer. And so what happens is we talk a lot. We tend to do scaled innovation in cycles. So we talk a lot about what do we want to do? Like right now we're doing a lot of 2020 planning. Like what do we want to do next year? How do we want to make sure that everything that we do want to do comes to life and fits in the right time and place? Because that's the other thing is like, you know, there are really great opportunities to try beers. The Graders is one of the prime examples, but that's a stout primarily and black raspberry chip stout. And that beer wouldn't play very well in the summer. So you got to make sure you've got room to be able to produce it when it needs to be produced. So there's a lot of planning that goes into place around, okay, what do brewers want to produce based on conversations and data and social media and sales and everything we're looking at? What do consumers want to drink? And then where do you find that Venn diagram to produce the brands that you want to produce in the next year and get a run at it? And so right now we're working on a couple of big projects for next year. I can't talk too much about them yet because they're not all fully baked. But that's honestly, that's how Vive came to be. So
let's talk about Vive, because please. This really seems like it's a place that the breweries are going and the whole alcohol industry as a whole are going. Like all of a sudden, it's like these cans of...
Hard seltzer.
Yeah.
Well, and I talk a lot about it. So we've done quite a few podcasts because Vive has been a very somewhat controversial product with respect to the craft beer community here in Cincinnati. We were the first to bring the product to market. We're one of the only to produce them, and a lot of people like, you know, we're really kind of giving us flack for doing it. And the reality is that for us, like Braxton, specifically Vive in general, right? Like Braxton and craft beer as a whole has not done a very good job addressing the need for sessionable or better for you products. Like I drink craft beer as much as the next guy. And if you look at the videos on the website of like the very first time we opened this place to now, you can see that the Braxton 25, as they call it, is very real. Like this is not an industry that's great for your health. Like you're out, you know, drinking heavy calorie beers. So
perhaps that's a Cincinnati. I'm just saying.
It's a thing. It's a real thing. And so with Vive, like we took about a year and a half to develop a product that fit that better for you category, that 100 calories, that 2 grams of carbs, 2 grams of sugar. And we launched it this year because it's for us. And I think you captured it really well when you said it. And I like when people say that, it means the world to me. We don't half-ass anything. Like we will not put our name on something if it's not done correctly. And that's ultimately why, like, we could have probably launched a hard seltzer 2 years ago, but it would not have tasted good.
Yeah.
And it takes, like, the capital investment and time and energy we put into creating the process for this product is one that I would challenge a lot of breweries can't do. Like, you know, so for them to kind of laugh at general of, like, you're doing a hard seltzer, like, I think there's a reason we haven't seen too many other locals do it, because I think it's pretty difficult to produce.
Well, there's a huge demand for it. Like, this is what people are drinking at the pool.
Yep.
We went kayaking on the Little Miami over the weekend. If you listen to the podcast, we're kayakers here. And, you know, it was kind of like a surprise trip, and we didn't really plan, and now we have nothing. So I just kind of kayaked down that river, and I was stopped at places, and, like, the people on the side of the river, I'm like, what do you got? And, like, people were handing me vibes.
Yeah.
And that,
that's,
you know,
great to hear.
But that's what... that's what they were drinking all along the way. They chose to bring that with them in their coolers. This is like, I feel like,
and to be honest with you, Vive has really changed everything for us because it's provided such an amazing halo for everything that we're doing. So we were able to step up into FC Cincinnati, and that's been a great sponsorship for both beer and hard seltzer. We announced just last week that we partnered with the Bengals to create the hard seltzer for them. And what it's really done is it's brought more awareness to our entire company and brewery as a whole. And so we're seeing it trickle through, not just with seltzer, but with beer as well.
So we're looking at the variety pack right now, and there's going to be 12 cans in it. The question is, and this is an important question, is it enough for a Bengals game?
Well,
is it going to get you through?
Early in the season or late in the season? That's a great question. Listen, growing up here, I've always been a Bengals fan. I've been such a Cincinnati sports fan, and I've, like we were talking about it last night, like I've never in my life, I've never seen a home playoff game for, like, other than the Bengals. We went to one.
Do you know what a Bengals fan would tell you?
What?
This is the year.
Yeah, right. You're exactly right. Year. Actually, what's funny about this year is I don't think there's a lot of people saying that, but I'm like, I feel pretty good about them. Like, I mean, more so than other years. Why not?
I read a profile of the new coach today when I was in a waiting room somewhere, and it was very, it was like, there's a lot of excitement around things this year.
Yeah.
You talk about innovation. You guys are the only ones in this crazy exploding market of hard seltzer who are doing this in the local market. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question about it. Like, very technical question.
Yeah.
So how did you decide the alcohol content in it? Like too little, what's too little, what's too much?
It was, the alcohol content was the derivation of wanting to hit specific nutritional information.
Oh, okay.
So like you can't, there's a lot of science out there that would argue that you can't hit 100 calories at anything above 5% alcohol.
And
so we decided that 5% was the right because you wanted to hit 100 calories. Just a round number.
Yeah, because that grabs you. Like, you're a woman. That grabs you at the store shelf.
You're seeing a lot of people, like, play with things. Like, I saw earlier, read this week, that White Claw is releasing a 3.7% alcohol for 70 calories. And, like, you've got...
So you're drinking water? Is that
Pabst
how that
Blue
works?
Ribbon. Pabst Blue Ribbon's releasing one that's 8% alcohol. So it's, like, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next few years.
You talk about the innovation and that you guys are the only ones doing the hard seltzer. You talk about this local market, and we look and think about the local market. Do you guys all get along? Like, do all the Mad Tree and Rheingeist and Braxton and 50 West, is it healthy competition or is it?
I think there's absolutely no doubt that the craft industry as a whole has matured over the past 4+ years that we've been in business. That being said, I think that the competition that exists today is incredibly healthy. And I believe and want to believe that there's a mutual respect of everyone doing their own business. So like we don't like go into bars and restaurants specifically targeting another brewery. We're hoping to sell more of our products, but everybody's kind of, at least for the, call it the 10 to 15 breweries that are really competing on a Kroger shelf, if you will.
Yeah.
I think that there's a mutual respect for everybody in the industry for what you're doing. Because at the end of the day, like, craft is exciting. It's everything, but it's still only like 2 out of every 10 beers consumed. So
really?
There's still a lot of runway for the ability to kind of make that 3 out of every 10.
Yeah.
And so I think that a lot of that gets lost in the fact that there are 60 plus breweries in this area. But I think at the end of the day, everybody really does respect each other and wants everyone to succeed.
Is there like a summit and you all get together in like a secret basement
somewhere?
It's a little
somewhere. Liars Club, if you will. No, not yet.
It's interesting. I've talked with some of the Mad Tree folks, and they say like if you run out of a product,
oh, raw materials.
Yeah.
So the relationship like brewery to brewery is like from the production and operation side. It's incredible. Like,
that's cool.
We lend malt to anybody who runs out. Like, you know, that kind of stuff happens all the time. I think it's more about the sales, the marketing,
business
side, where it's like, wait a minute, what are you doing? Like, but it does make it great.
You know, a lot of things, and I was telling Mitch Barnhart, your marketing director, this. We were just chatting before we started the show. You know, people ask me, like, you know, it said we're going to Braxton tonight, and they love Braxton, you know, and inevitably the question oftentimes comes up when you're talking about local breweries is like, when is enough? And how, like, at what point when it all shakes out and there's a recession or whatever, who's going to be around? And, you know, you oftentimes hear, well, Mad Tree and Braxton and Rheingeist and 50 West and, you know, a handful of others. Where is this industry going? And I'm speaking just on a local level.
Yeah, that's a great question. I definitely think it's something that everyone is thinking about now.
Yeah. Versus, I think it, were you I think not thinking about well, this I mean, a year just, ago or, well, I mean, or 2 years?
You're always thinking about it.
You're a business
I don't
person,
think it's very,
so yes.
Yeah,
you're
I don't think it's. I don't think it's ever really as apparent as it is right now.
Yeah.
I mean, because you got to understand, in the 4+ years that we've been in business, local used to be your state. Then local used to be, I mean, in the beginning, local was your region. Like, we were an Ohio brewery as much as we were a Kentucky brewery, so we sold well in Columbus and all that. Like, and now local is not even your state. Like, we are considered less local in Louisville than we are in Dayton, even though we're a Kentucky brewery, right? And so I think that the reason I say that is, as you think about the fact that we've had an incredible run with the economy, like, and you know, the craft beer is really maturing as an industry. I don't think the industry as a whole is going anywhere, but I do believe that you've got to really understand what you want out of the next 3 to 5 years to make sure that you don't get out over your skis, wake up the next day, and all of a sudden you're in a not so great economic climate. And that was the key decision we made here. Like, because the other alternative that we had instead of building the roof and kind of expanding production here was to really move, like pick up, go do the Mad Tree thing, which, I mean, I like those guys, $18 million expansion is incredible. I can't even imagine like that number and just
there's sometimes
managing
you
that.
Can't even park there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so
all their beer stays the same. Oh, sorry, I didn't say that.
But like, yeah. You know, you really have to make sure that you really know what you want out of the next 3 to 5 years and what you're comfortable with. And I think if you do that, I think everybody can survive. But I think that if you, like right now, what I would not be doing and the advice that I give other breweries that we speak to on a regular basis is I wouldn't, like right now, I would not be trying to spend the capital to grow from what I would call one level to the next. So like the breweries that are operating in those neighborhoods that are, you know, doing really well in their neighborhoods.
College Hill. Like
yeah, and they've got a great regular business.
Oh,
Westside
Brewing. I have
in.
To give a shout out to my like, Westside Brewing.
Like, yeah. You know, and ultimately they're doing great. The next step there naturally is to, you know, spend a couple $1 million, buy the canning line, buy the cans, buy, you know, and it's a vicious cycle. I would not be doing that right now.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know what's
going on. If Braxton were to start today, you wouldn't be doing that. Okay.
No. If Braxton were to start today, we would not be going after trying to be on Kroger shelves or anything like that. Just simply because there are already, like, unless you've got a truly differentiated product that consumers absolutely need. Like, you think about some of the greatest trends that are happening right now in beer, and they're happening mostly on the coasts. Like, you're looking at alcoholic kombucha is a thing in the West Coast. Like, that's a real thing. Actually, it's caught on so well that Sam Adams is starting to work on one. And, like, those are the types of things that are so different that you could justify making that move because retailers want you in their product mix. But if you're coming to the table with another IPA, like, or, you know, and we suffer from this. We've struggled with IPA for a long time. We finally have a great one now, but like it's tough, and that's why I'm saying like jumping from one tier to the next I think is really difficult unless you've got a product that people are telling you like I have to have it on my shelf.
Well, I need Haven. So you said
Haven's not going
people
anywhere,
absolutely need something. I need Braxton Haven. It is awesome. I'm a huge Hefeweizen fan, so Haven is awesome.
So I do think we need to give out a shout out to our producer with the mostest, Phil. I don't know, I'll have to come up with a better title than that for you, but Phil is a home brewer. He actually won a contest here.
Oh, yeah. The Hammer Down.
Our executive producer, Phil Didion. Yep.
Yeah, we took Best in Show this year, actually.
That's incredible. No, that was a great competition. I actually got to, so I'm not a certified judge, but I got to sit in on the judging and try all the beers, and my gosh, it's incredible the work that you guys did. Like,
thank you so much.
We're excited to brew that beer. Like, that's going to be awesome. Barley wine, right?
Yep, that's right. Yep.
So Jake, what if you, the home brewer comes to you and says, what advice do you have for me? What do you tell them?
You know, it really depends on what they're looking for. If they're looking to start a brewery, I tell them they need to get real experience first.
Yeah.
Just simply because it is very, very different producing beer at a scale for thousands of people or states or cities than producing beer for your family or your closest friends.
Yeah, I'm never letting Phil leave the Enquirer, so there you go, Phil. It's two of us. We're just going to roll forever at the Enquirer. He did. One of the best days in the newsroom so far this year. He did bring the beer in.
That was awesome.
A lovely little tasting. Burl's not here. I don't know if you're going to want to cut this part out. I don't know. I feel like he was okay
Burl
with it.
Burl, love our executive editor, who's awesome and very supportive of the podcast and was excited about us doing this tonight. I want to jump back to deciding on a new flavor or style when you put it in on the tap and in the cans. Ultimately, when the rubber meets the road, how is that decided? Or so let's just take Haven, for example.
Yeah.
Is it a committee that decides it? Is it you who decides it? Is you and Evan who decides it? How does that...
Evan, because ultimately... he's got to feel confident in the product that he puts together. So Haven, for instance, it's a great example.
It's a great beer.
And I actually believe that we probably messed up the brand on that beer more so than the beer itself. The beer's great. So that was a confluence of Evan wanting to produce a Hefeweizen because he loves the style.
Yep.
Got together with our brewers who had a lot of experience in German-style beers, and they wrote a recipe for a Hefeweizen that's incredible. Beer's great. So, okay, we've got this great beer. We put it on tap in our tap room, and it starts to get ordered quite a bit. We get a lot of great feedback on, you know, how people like it, you know, what they don't like, what they do like. And then we decide, all right, we need to fit a beer into a seasonal calendar because that's a particular style. So for us, we keep that on tap all year round here. Not many people know that, but it's only in cans for about 3 or 4 months out of the year. And so what we did is we basically created a brand that fit into a seasonal calendar in the spring to kind of celebrate the, you know, the turn of the weather, if you will.
Yep.
And that was the coming in with a need because there was not and still really isn't a local Hef. So, like, you know, we really wanted to create a local Hefeweizen because we liked the style and it just kind of came to be. There's not really a big scientific process. I know it looks and sounds like it on the outside, but sometimes it really is just what Evan wants to produce and what we think we can sell.
Well, it's interesting because we back in June, I believe we had Rich Grader, the CEO of Graders, on our podcast, and one of your partners, and have been a great partner for you guys, and vice versa. And he talked about the flate when they come up with a new flavor. It's much the same way. One of the family members goes into the French pod and creates it, and then but they have a weekly meeting. I believe he said on Tuesday. And there's a committee of people, and the guy brings it in and passes out all the way around the table the a little sampling of the ice cream, and then everybody essentially votes on, well, oh, yay or nay.
And it's been, in all honesty, working with the Graders family has been absolutely incredible because we're a family business. They're a 140-plus-year-old family business, right? And, like, we've learned so much. I had lunch with their team today, and we've learned so much from them about – how to do things right, because our businesses are actually incredibly similar, even though we're in alcohol and they're in ice cream. Like, so we have a lot of very similar conversations, and it's been great to learn from them.
In much the same way, and Rich Grader said this, like, we are a treat to people, and we aren't going to veer from, I think we asked him, like, well, do you want to get into the diet ice cream and the low sugar? And he said, no, we're not into that. People expect this is what they get from Graders. Yep. And I think the same thing for you guys. Like, and obviously you have to always try new things, Vive being one of them. And, you know, I think before we move on, congratulations on your partnerships with FC Cincinnati, your partnerships with the Bengals, the growth of Vive. You know, we talked about the commitment to excellence. You said it took a year and a half, and you said that was not easy, but
the cool thing is, and I talk about this a lot when I talk to people who ask about what it is like working here and what it's like doing. The thing about my brother, and he, like I said, he does all product development, recipe writing, all of that, is like, have you guys ever been to like a really great restaurant? Like, let's say Soto. Have you been to Soto?
I've been to Soto. It is a really great restaurant.
Soto's incredible, right? And if you're fortunate enough to sit at the chef's table at Soto, it's incredible. If you watch them and you see, like, the look in the eye of the chefs, like, you know that there's, like, a determination that every single dish that crosses over that line to be served to a customer is going to be incredible because he's putting his name on it. And if you watch him, like, anything that's 1/10 of a degree off, they dump the whole thing and start over. that's much like how product development is here at Braxton. You watch my brother, who started with Vive with a team of, you know, two or three very passionate brewers, but all of them going into this saying, we don't know anything about how to create this. And it is very different than beer. Like, we won't get into all the science of how it gets created and all of that because it's boring and way over our heads. But to watch them every day go in and say, we're good, but we're not good enough.
Yeah.
And that's why it took so long to create the product. And so ultimately, like, that's what makes it so fun from a family business perspective, because you get to finally see somebody who's truly in their element and making sure that they're not, like, that they're not going to let anything fail because it would jeopardize them as they are. Like, they, every beer that comes through this facility is an extension of Evan as a human being. And, like, that's really powerful. And I don't know that that exists in businesses where you're not as passionate about the product.
Yeah.
Which beer do you have in your fridge at home?
So I have a lot of Vive in my house. But in all honesty, I have a couple. I have garage beer for sure. Summer Trip is hands down one of my favorite beers that we produce. It's coming to an end, unfortunately, as we move into the fall. But right now, what I'm really drinking is October Fuel. It's our Oktoberfest lager. You can't be a Cincinnati brewery and not celebrate Oktoberfest, right?
Agree.
I think our Oktoberfest is one of the best in the country. It's truly four brewers who are all German trained coming together to write the recipe. And we're one of the only breweries still in the country that use what's called decoction mashing, which is basically a long bloated way of picking up the malt, sending it over to the boil kettle, letting it bake for a little bit, and then turning around and putting it back in the boil. And it creates this amazing flavor profile that you can really only get out of that style. So that's what I'm drinking right now for sure.
All right. That's next for me tonight then.
Gotta try it.
I know Phil's giving us a signal here, but garage beer, you said this started in your garage. Is it safe to say, is garage beer named after the fact that you guys started Braxton in your garage back in Union, Kentucky? Since it's my favorite, Haven, like, how do you come up with the names?
Oh, you know what? That is a great question. Naming beer?
He's not naming one after you, Jason. I'm just saying that right now.
Nor do I want one. It will be a terrible seller, and it will be a failure.
Let me tell you, naming beer with 7,000 breweries in America is not fun.
Oh, man. You know what? We could call it PX. There we go. I got it now.
Because there are times when you're, like, in love with a name.
Oh, no,
and a quick Google search ruins it for you. And so, you know, name it. It's funny. Like, Haven was actually – Haven, actually, I will – that name has a great story. We didn't have a name for the Hef, and we didn't know what we wanted to call it. So we were on a – we take our sales team to Keeneland twice a year. We go down just to kind of celebrate the success if we have it, and – we were on a trip down to Keeneland, and we were like, we're not leaving this bus until someone gives us a name for Haven. And somebody was like, Haven. And I'm like, we Googled it the whole way down, and it stuck.
Woo. Oh, I want to go on your bus to Keeneland. That's pretty fun.
Does Haven, the fact you the on the cans, which, by the way, I want to make sure people know this, you can buy in stores, in cans, you can buy Braxton beers and products, Vive as well, in Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Correct? Yep. Is that all over both states?
Yep.
In what stores can you get
Kroger,
that?
Kroger, Meijer, some Walmarts. Like, we're working really hard to expand our distribution footprint. So, it's
so Haven, cool. One of the unique things about Haven is that you say store that upside down, the can.
Yeah.
Does it work?
Well, it really – so the entire thing about Haven is German Hefeweizens. If you go to a restaurant, you typically store the keg upside down.
Okay.
And you do that because you really want to be able to make sure that the yeast doesn't settle. It's an unfiltered beer.
Yeah, right. And
so
there's a lot of settlement.
The reason we say store it upside down, that really doesn't happen on a can level, but it just teaches the consumer. So you basically don't want it to settle. You flip it over, and then the yeast suspends in the liquid and tastes, gives you that amazing banana clove flavor that you've come to love.
And I love it. Jake, thanks so much for doing this. Thank you so much for having us.
No, thank you.
Thank you so much
for
taking
this all day.
Yeah, me too. It's a beautiful night.
It's a beautiful night, you know.
Is there something you want to add that we didn't ask you about that you want to let folks know who are going to be listening, not just here tonight, but are out, you know, listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all these different platforms?
You know, I just really appreciate you guys coming over here. I mean, I think that you know, Cincinnati has been home for Evan and I pretty much our entire lives. I had a brief stint somewhere else, but it's amazing. Like, it's an honor, honestly, to be on the podcast that has had Rich Grader and Marty Brenneman, and like, that's amazing, right? And so thank you guys for doing this with us. And, you know, we work really hard to try to elevate the city and try to tell the story of what Cincinnati can be, and Covington, you know, fits really well into that. And, you know, we hope that everybody can kind of tell that as they drink a beer. So,
absolutely. Again, check out Braxton Tap Room at 27 West 7th Street in Covington, right in the heart of downtown Covington. Check out Braxton Labs over at the Party Source. You can buy Braxton. I almost said you can buy us because I love it so much. In Kroger, Meijer, as Jake just said, anywhere in Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee. So if you're going down to North Lake, which I just did this past weekend, you can get it while you're down there, and you don't have to buy it here and take it. So, Jake, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Give it up for Jake, everyone. All right, thanks to Jake Rouse, CEO of Braxton and Braxton Brewing, for allowing us to have time here on the roof to go live again. Again, this is our second live episode, and I feel like it was great. People were so awesome. Braxton, so much like the Flying Pig Marathon, really embraced us, and much like you, the listener, has embraced us. So, Sherry?
Also, we get to drink at work. Oops, sorry.
Sorry, Burl. No, thanks again. I guess, you know, this was our quintessential summer's winding down. It's been a crazy run of news with Tracy Hunter, with the Trump rally, with Dayton shooting.
A lot of violence this summer.
A lot of violence, unfortunately. And, you know, there's a time and place for us to talk serious stuff, politics. We certainly do plenty of that on this podcast, but, with it being summertime, and we wanted to give you guys a little break from the craziness, and something that's so wonderful and is such a great company and is doing great things, not just in Covington, but in greater Cincinnati, and that's Braxton Brewing. So I want to do that tonight.
I agree. You know, this is like part of the fabric of our city here at Braxton and our other breweries in our neighborhoods. I'm watching them grow. Like, this is who we are.
Absolutely. So we're going to sign off here from a beautiful sunny night here on Braxton's rooftop. Again, folks, if you haven't been here, 27th West 7th Street, Covington, Kentucky, just across the bridge, from downtown Cincinnati. It's a wonderful place. It's a great view of not only, the downtown Cincinnati skyline, but really of the entire, all of Northern Kentucky, the hills. Certainly are lush green right now. So come out, check out Braxton if you haven't already. I know so many of you have. It's a wonderful place. As Sherry said, it's a part of our community, and they're doing great things. So again, I want to give a shout out to last week, folks. The listenership on recently has just been awesome. I can't say any other word for it. Our Marty Brenneman episode last week, our Joe Dieters episode recently, Red Bike with Jason Barron recently. Thank you so much for embracing this podcast. Because you've embraced it, we have the opportunity to come out here to Braxton and to do a different thing. So thank you so much. Tell your friends, share on Facebook, share on Twitter, Instagram. Let folks know That's So Cincinnati podcast is out there. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audio Boom, so many different podcast platforms. Also, post to Cincinnati.com around lunchtime every Wednesday. So check us out. Give us your feedback at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter, at Jay Williams Cincy with a Y on Twitter. Also, shoot Sherry an email, scoolidge@inquirer.com. Or shoot me an email, jwilliams@inquirer.com. We want to hear your feedback. Give us ideas on future shows, future episodes, sorry.
When's the one-year anniversary? Soon, right?
Yeah, and the one-year anniversary is soon. We launched this podcast September 3rd last year, 2018, right after Labor Day, this thing got going. So we have a few more episodes in our first season, and we're still here. At first, we just thought, let's give this a try from September until the end of 2018. And I wish if I could give every one of you a koozie and a T-shirt and a thank you and a hug and a high five, I would do that. So we'll do more of these live episodes that we'll look forward to you coming out to. But thank you for making this such a success and embracing it. And thank you for, you know, we had Paul Daner Jr. as our original founder of this podcast, and Sherry has picked it up and really helped elevate this. And so thank you so much. Sherry, you have
love
the final word.
Love sitting with you every week, Jason. Love it.
Love sitting with you. You're my friend, my teammate.
Agreed.
And Phil Didion on the ones and twos, the most talented video podcast.
Beer brewer
guy in all of Greater Cincinnati. So thanks, Phil, for making this happen. We'll check at you next week. Let us know. Again, share, email us, Twitter, and we'll talk at you next week.